So in this talk, I'm going to introduce a simple correspondence between quantum many-body states using tensor networks, and then explore some basic connections between this correspondence and the holographic correspondence of string theory. So let me just begin by saying that parts of this work were done with Gavin Brennan, associate professor at Macquarie University in Sydney, and Nathan McMahon, who is a PhD student at the University of Queensland in Brisbane. I also want to thank Giffrey for giving me this opportunity to talk about this work here. So let me just begin with a broad overview of what I'm going to talk about. So as many in this audience know, that a useful lesson we've learned from applying quantum information ideas to study condensed matter problems is that oftentimes low energy states of local many-body Hamiltonians can be efficiently parameterized as a tensor network. So there are several popular tensor network representations, MPS, PEPS, MERA, and they form the basis of many powerful many-body simulation algorithms. But in this talk, I'm going to describe how a tensor network representation of a quantum many-body state also encodes, in a simple and natural way, a different quantum many-body state. And then I'm going to say that these two states correspond or are related to each other by means of this tensor network. So this correspondence is generic in that it applies to any tensor network representation. But in this talk, I'm going to apply it to a specific tensor network, the MERA, which, as we know, describes the renormalization group flow of a quantum many-body ground state, say. Now, in case of the MERA, the two states are seen to live at the boundary and the bulk of a given geometry. So in this case, you get a bulk boundary type correspondence between quantum many-body states. So I have two goals in this talk. One is I want to propose that this bulk boundary correspondence that I will construct for the MERA is a candidate implementation of at least some features of the holographic correspondence on a lattice. Now, this is in light of this ongoing discussion between the MERA, possible connections between the MERA and the holographic correspondence. And the second goal is to just present a new and general bulk boundary correspondence between quantum many-body states that's constructed using tensor networks. And there could be potential applications of this beyond holography. For instance, you can write down a MERA, a simple MERA, by hand. You can choose some simple tensors that encode two states, one which belongs to a symmetry broken phase of matter, and second one belonging to a topological phase of matter. So this bulk boundary correspondence can also be potentially used to relate different types of quantum orders in condensed matter systems. But in this talk, I'm just going to focus on possible applications to holography. So this is what I'm going to talk about. So I'm going to give a very basic review of the holographic correspondence in the MERA, basically touching on features that I'm going to use in this talk. Then I'm going to introduce this bulk boundary correspondence. Then I'm going to tell you a simple way in which these bulk and boundary states are related together, how their properties are related together. Then I'm going to explore the entanglement and correlations in the bulk state that I'll construct. And then finally, I'll introduce some meaningful bulk observables for this bulk state. And in that process, I will make a concrete connection between the MERA and spin networks as they appear in lattice gauge theory, where they label a basis in the gauge invariant subspace of the lattice. All right, so let me just begin with the holographic correspondence. So the holographic correspondence is an equivalence between a theory of gravity in d dimensions, d-dimensional spacetime, and a quantum field theory in d minus one dimensions, such that the quantum field theory lives on the boundary of this d-dimensional spacetime, and the extra dimension in the bulk corresponds to the RG flow, the length scale of the boundary theory. Now, this is a general idea. A concrete realization of this is the ADS-CFT correspondence, where the bulk theory lives in an anti-de-Sitter spacetime. So here's a picture usually used to illustrate ADS-CFT correspondence in 2 plus 1 dimensions. This is a solid cylinder, which is a Penrose diagram of 2 plus 1 ADS spacetime. So the bulk theory of gravity lives inside the cylinder, and the theory of the boundary is a special quantum field theory, namely a conformal field theory, the actions invariant under conformal transformations. And the extra dimension here, the radial dimension Z, corresponds to length scale of the boundary theory. All right, so the holographic correspondence is an example of a strong weak type duality. If the bulk theory is strongly coupled, then the corresponding boundary theory is weakly coupled, and vice versa. So you have two kind of regimes in this correspondence. One where there's classical or semi-classical gravity in the bulk. This is, for instance, the dual description of certain so-called large N gauge theories and conformal field theories with a large central charge. And in this regime, for instance, the ground state of the CFT is dual to a spatial slice of 2 plus 1 ADS, whose radius of curvature is determined by the central charge of the CFT. And here's an example of another interesting correspondence in this case. The entanglement entropy of a region of size L in the ground state is equal to the length of a geodesic extending between the endpoints of the region through the bulk. And this is the so-called Ryu Takayanagi formula. All right, so in this talk, I'm going to just be looking at the 2 plus 1 case and a 1 plus 1 CFT. The other regime is the quantum gravity regime. So for instance, certain conformal field theories with a small central charge are dual to quantum gravity in the bulk. A recent result is gravity dual of the Ising model, where they compute the bulk partition function by summing over various geometries in the bulk that are compatible with certain boundary conditions. So it's a quantum gravity-like partition function. Of course, in this regime, there's no description in the bulk in terms of a classical geometry. And generally, you would have a quantum state at the boundary dual to a quantum state in the bulk. All right, and finally, the symmetries of the boundary and bulk states are also related in an interesting way. As a general rule of thumb, if the boundary state has a global symmetry, so namely the symmetry acts identically with the same group element at all space-time locations on the boundary, then the corresponding bulk state has a local symmetry under the action of the same group. So the group can act with different group elements at different space-time locations. In terms of a field theory kind of description, you would say that if the CFT has a global symmetry, then there's a corresponding gauge field in the bulk, and this gauge field is valued in the algebra of the symmetry. And in the full quantum gravity regime, the bulk state, the bulk vacuum, is going to be generally entangled between these gauge degrees of freedom and the gravitational degrees of freedom and possibly other degrees of freedom. All right, so that's all I wanted to say about the holographic correspondence. So these are the kind of features I'm going to be kind of touching upon, trying to kind of make some connections using the mirror. So I just want to quickly review the mirror representation of ground states, 1D ground states. So consider a 1D lattice, where each side is a spin qubit atom with just some quantum degree of freedom. And I'm going to look at an infinite, so thermodynamic limit, so the lattice is infinite. And the lattice is equipped with the action of a Hamiltonian that is local, translation invariant, and critical. Local meaning it's a sum of terms that involve interactions only of a few neighboring sites, and critical, it's gapless and described by a conformal field theory in the continuum. So we're going to be interested in the ground state of this Hamiltonian, which can formally be expanded in the local tensor product like this, where these ket O1, O2 are an orthonormal basis on sites 1, 2, etc. But instead of representing the tensor, the ground state like this, which basically means specifying these probability amplitudes, which can be encoded in a tensor with as many indices as there are sites on the lattice, I'm going to represent the ground state by a tensor network, specifically the mirror, which is basically a set of tensors that are connected like this. And this is an infinite tensor network that extends infinitely in both the horizontal directions and the vertical direction. So the first thing to notice here is that there are two types of tensors here, which just for namesake, I'm going to call them disentangler and isometry. These tensors, they are not completely free. They are constrained to satisfy these properties. Namely, if you take a disentangler and contract it with its adjoint, you get the identity, and so with the isometry. The next thing to notice here is that there are two types of indices in this tensor network. So open indices at the bottom of the tensor network, which are in one-to-one correspondence with the open indices on the left-hand side here, and also one-to-one correspondence with the sides of the lattice. So, and then there are these bond indices that connect different tensors in the tensor network. All right, so this tensor network is a representation of this ground state in the sense that you can recover these probability amplitudes by contracting all these tensors together, which involves summing all these bond indices. So a characteristic feature of the mirror representation of the ground state is that the vertical direction corresponds to length scale. So the way to think about this is that the mirror is kind of, you can see this, look at the mirror as a composition of layers of descent angles and isometries shown here in different colors. And each one of these layers implements a co-screening transformation on a lattice. More specifically, if you discard some of these bottom layers, the residual tensor network represents the same ground state on a co-screened lattice. For example, let's throw away the yellow layer. Then this tensor network is a representation of the same ground state. Has exactly the same ground state properties, but on a lattice which is co-screened. So each side over here corresponds to three sites of the original ultraviolet lattice, and then so on. So therefore, you get the sequence of increasingly co-screened ground states. So therefore, a mirror So in this sense, the mirror representation encodes an RG flow of the ground state. The other interesting feature of the mirror is that it has a hyperbolic geometry. There are two ways to see this. One is you could look at geodesics between two sites at the same scale, here, for instance, at the boundary. And you look at the shortest distance between them through the network, and defining distance as the number of links that you have to hop to get from one side to the other. And if you stare long enough at this picture, you see that if the two sites are separated by L sites at the same scale, then the length of the geodesics is log L, which is a feature of hyperbolic geometry. The other way to think about this as a hyperbolic geometry is to see this as tiling a two-dimensional plane. And then in the graph metric, where each one of these edges have the same length, unit length, the plaquettes or the faces that have the same shape must have the same area. But here, the yellow and green ones, you can see that they don't seem to have the same area. That's precisely because you've laid a tiling of curved space, in this case, negatively curved space, on a flat plane. Which stretches and deforms these tiles. All right, so, and then more recently, mirror has also been of interest, and this is going to be the focus of this talk, as a potential realization of some features of the holographic correspondence. So the basic observation there is that, look, I mean, so mirror is a natural ansatz for critical ground states. It extends in one higher dimension. The extra dimension corresponds to length scale. It has a hyperbolic geometry. So maybe it kind of reminds of the holographic correspondence. So the first conjecture made by Swingle was that you could think of the hyperbolic geometry of the mirror as a spatial slice of 2 plus 1 ADS. And since then, several features of the holographic correspondence have been sketched out. An analog, the Ryu-Takayanagi formula, this black hole thermal state correspondence, the way the bulk boundary symmetries are related together. However, many of these observations are qualitative. And one of the goals in this talk is to kind of take some first steps in making this some of these features more concrete. And I'm going to do this by deducing from the mirror representation of a ground state a two-dimensional bulk state. So I just want to mention, before I tell you how that's done, I just want to mention that more recently it's been argued that the mirror's geometry should be rather thought of as 1 plus 1 Disseter geometry. But I want to emphasize that what I'm going to say in this talk does not depend on any specific interpretation of the mirror's geometry. So it holds in either case. All right, so that's all I wanted to say about that. So now let me just start with this. Let me introduce this bulk boundary correspondence. So let's start with the mirror representation of a critical ground state. This is the starting point. So I get this representation from a computer, or someone gives it to me, or whatever. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to derive a two-dimensional quantum state from this same network. And I'm going to do this in three steps. I'm going to lift the mirror representation of a 1D state to a tensor network representation of a two-dimensional state. I'll do it in three steps. The first step is simply I'm going to embed this tensor network in a two-dimensional plane, manifold, which has a boundary, such that the open indices of the tensor network intersect the boundary and the bond indices are located inside the bulk of the manifold. The second step is I'm going to treat the bond indices of the tensor network on the same footing as the open indices. So just like each open index in the mirror labels an orthonormal basis on a site of this original 1D lattice, I'm going to use each bond index to label an orthonormal basis on a new site, so on a site of a two-dimensional hyperbolic lattice. So essentially, I'm constructing a two-dimensional hyperbolic lattice by associating sites with each bond of this tensor network. And the third and final step is I'm going to modify this tensor network by inserting a three-index tensor on every bond. And the tensor that I'm going to insert is a rather simple one. It's a copy tensor, or just it's a 3-index Kronecker delta. And so now this tensor network, this modified tensor network, which I'm going to call the lifted mirror, the lifted from 1D to a 2D description, is a quantum many-body state of a two-dimensional hyperbolic lattice with these red sites. So you see that the mirror only has open indices at the boundary, but this bulk tensor network, which extends infinitely, has open indices throughout the bulk. And these open indices are associated with these bulk degrees of freedom. So just to summarize, so far what I've done is, from a mirror, I've defined two states. So one state whose probability amplitudes are obtained by simply contracting all the tensors together, and second one by first lifting it, as I've described, and then contracting all the tensors. So this gives me these 1D state, which I'm going to call which is the boundary state, and a 2D state, which is the bulk state. And both these states, well, they're related by a common mirror tensor network. And all I've done here in order to lift this representation to a 2D state is I've treated the open and bound indices on the same footing, which seems to be like a natural thing to do. There's nothing exotic there. In other words, I've treated the renormalized degrees of freedom in the RG flow as physical degrees of freedom of two-dimensional hyperbolic lattice. All right, so this is my bulk boundary correspondence. So this is the.
Quick question, just to make sure that I understood correctly. Do you consider the original boundary sites to be a subset of your bulk sites?
Right, No, you don't have to. So as a bulk description, you can think of this tensor network, you're deep in the bulk, so the boundary is infinitely far away. So you just think of this network which extends infinitely in all directions, and all your bulk sites are the red sites. So you can, there is a boundary formally, but this is infinitely far. You can look at properties in the bulk which are infinitely far away from this boundary.
Sure, okay, but in a sense the boundary is still part of your space that you're considering. So it's not a mapping from the boundary states to bulk.
No, it's not. So that's a different state, and all the degrees of freedom in that and in the lifted mirror are going to be are different degrees of freedom. So I can choose a UV cutoff in my boundary description, which corresponds to truncating the lifted tensor network at some finite distance, so inducing a boundary on the geometry. But the degrees of freedom that appear on the boundary, there, I'm just going to think of them as being one-to-one identified with my degrees of freedom on the bound and in my boundary description, rather than being the same degrees of freedom. This is also like, this is how you do it in the Ryu Takayanagi formula as well. Else, how do you talk about the geodesic between two boundary sites in the bulk, right? You need to make this identification. Yeah.
Should the copy tensor be thought of as cloning a quantum state?
It's kind of, yes. So I'm calling it a copy tensor because it copies the bond index of the mirror to an open index of the lifted mirror. So it copies the states on the bond indices of the mirror to an open index.
The reason I ask is that sometimes one likes to think of the mirror as a unitary circuit.
Yes.
But is it possible to implement, is it possible to reconcile the two notions of cloning the state and having a unitary circuit?
The lifted state, I'm not sure whether you can prepare that or you can think of that as a unitary circuit. So this transformation is kind of, I don't know how it relates to thinking. It's not a unitary transformation. It's not a change of basis or anything.
But there is not cloning right here.
And in this, well, cloning, I just, so I didn't, yeah, so.
So it's just a linear map.
Is it a linear map?
I mean, tensor is just linear map.
Yeah, but I don't know the map which takes you from the boundary state to the bulk state, as in I don't know how to mathematically write this transformation.
No,
I've just inserted these.
Right? It takes one index and two indices.
Just think about this three left hand of which populates. It's not growing.
No, but it takes one index to two, right?
That's fine. It's just a linear move. There is no growing.
Yeah, the other way I would say this is that the degrees of freedom on the bonds of the mirror, they're virtual. They're not real anyway, right? So all we're doing is we have the same degree of freedom. The bond, we're just making it physical. So cloning, not in the sense of cloning a quantum state in another quantum state, but copying the bond degree of freedom of a virtual bond degree of freedom of the mirror to a physical degree of freedom of this lifted tensor network. All right, so that's going to be my bulk state. So I'm going to say, yeah, okay. So the proposal that I want to make, and I want to see if this kind of makes sense, is that this bulk state is the holographic dual of the ground state. which means that this bulk state is a physical state of some quantum gravity theory. For instance, if the relevant theory is loop quantum gravity, you might want to check if this bulk state satisfies the constraint of that theory. So for instance, the diffeomorphism Hamiltonian constraints. Yeah. So I just want to comment very quickly on some differences from existing approaches to define a bulk description from the mirror. So here, first of all, I'm not going to attempt to deduce any classical geometry from the bulk. So I have a quantum state at the boundary, I have a quantum state in the bulk. So generally, I have a quantum state in the bulk, which may reduce to some sort of a classical description at some limit, but I'm not going to talk about that either. And here, we are associating bulk degrees of freedom with the bonds and not with the tensors, as is done in this proposal called the exact holographic mapping. So there, you basically replace each tensor of the mirror, which is an isometry, by a unitary tensor at the cost of introducing new degrees of freedom, and these are essentially your bulk degrees of freedom. These two proposals are not the same, as far as I can tell. And associating degrees of freedom with the bonds allows for a suitable introduction of gauge transformations in the bulk, and this I'll talk about later. So, all right. So let me just begin with a simple calculation with the bulk state, just to, yeah.
Is there any benefit in Naira?
This is all in light of this ongoing discussion that the mirror is has something to do with the holographic correspondence. So it's an RG description of the ground state.
No, but actually, the only thing that you're using is that it's a hyperbolic. It's like hyperbolic geometry.
It's hyperbolic geometry. The tensor network has a hyperbolic geometry. You can think of this as a discretization of the hyperbolic plane.
But do you use what's in tensors or not?
Oh, yeah. So the tensors are the same. I'm keeping the same tensors.
Yeah, but like, is it crucial for you what sits there?
Yeah, because the tensors encode the properties of the critical ground state. So all the conformal data associated with the critical ground state.
You are we going to use it? Question.
I will show you. But it's true. But like I said at the very beginning, this prescription to lift a tensor network state to a different tensor network state is general. You can apply it to any tensor network representation. So a simple calculation with this bulk state. So let's say we wanted to compute the reduced state of one side in the bulk. We do it just as you do it with any tensor network representation. You take the lifted mirror, you sew it with the conjugate mirror along all the open indices in the bulk. So all these copy tensors now get connected, except you leave some indices open, and these are the indices associated with your site of interest. And now you have to contract all these tensors together. Now this looks like a fairly ugly contraction, but what you see is because these tensors are isometric, you obtain a simplification in the following way. So you can introduce these elementary contractions. So a disentangler, and it's a joint, and with the copy tensors around it, you can replace all this contraction with a single tensor, capital U, which is simply obtained from your disentangler by taking the absolute value squared of all its components. So since this U is an isometry or a unitary, this is a stochastic tensor. A stochastic matrix, for instance, is one whose rows and columns are probability amplitudes. If you sum all the rows, you get a vector of ones. So the analogous condition here is if you sum the two indices of this tensor, which kind of you can see this as contracting it with a plus state. The plus state is simply equal superposition of all your basis states. Then you get a tensor product of two plus states. And you can do a similar replacement of this elementary contraction with a stochastic tensor. So making these replacements in this contraction, you get a simplified contraction. Well, at least all the double indices are gone, and now you just have a mirror tensor network where you've replaced all the disentanglers and isometries with the corresponding stochastic tensors, except for a few original tensors and copy tensors that remain in the vicinity of the site where you're interested in. But using the fact that these are stochastic tensors, you can simplify this tensor network because there's a capping of all these plus vectors at the length scale at which you're interested. And basically, this contraction simplifies to something like this. So the point I want to make here is that the reduced state of a site in the bulk does not depend on all the tensors in the bulk. It just depends on a few tensors at every length scale. And this is true for any location in the bulk. So the reduced state of any one of these sites depends only on a few tensors coming from each length scale. And in the language of Mera, if you're familiar with this, the bulk state also has a causal cone structure, which the mirror as a representation of the boundary state also has. So this is a practical feature of this lifting procedure, namely that this this allows for an efficient computation of all like bulk properties. So at least you can now play around with bulk properties and see if there's something something of interest there. All right, so next I'm going to just show you that the bulk and boundary states can be related in a simple way. So let me start with a very basic observation of how the boundary state is recovered from the bulk state. And this is by simply projecting all the bulk sites to the plus state. This can be seen graphically. It's easy to see this graphically. So that's your bulk state. And now applying this projector, projecting all the bulk sites to the plus state corresponds to contracting the open indices of all these copy tensors with the plus state. And when you contract a copy tensor with a plus state, you get the identity. So projecting a bulk site to the plus state amounts to essentially removing this copy tensor, and you recover the boundary state. So there's nothing fancy. It's just I'm just reversing the lift. And this is by construction. I chose to construct my bulk state in a certain way, and that can be reversed in this way. But what I want to then show you is that this leads to a simple prescription of computing two-point correlators boundary and then the boundary state from the bulk. So for example, let's say I'm interested in computing a two-point correlator of a scaling operator. This is the meta now. So this is in the boundary description. I've drawn the boundary contraction just like the bulk, just to make an easy visual comparison. But this is a tensor network contraction of this two-point correlator in the boundary description. So here, the purple tensors are the meta, and it's overlaid on the conjugate meta behind. But these two meras are connected only along the open indices of the boundary. And then these are your one-side operators, and they're scaling operators of the conformal field theory with a certain scaling dimension. And in the formalism of the mirror, they are eigen operators of this one-side ascending super operator. Right, so let me first show you how to what this correlator is and in the boundary state, and then I'm going to do a computation in the bulk and show you that the results match. Okay, so because these tensors are isometries, then all the tensors that are located in this in these shaded parts, they simply cancel out. So the contraction simplifies to something like this, where each one of these T tensors is nothing but the one site's ascending superoperator. And since these guys are eigen operators of this, they propagate through all these length scales, and you get a simple contraction like this in the end, where this E is some sort of an environment tensor, which is obtained by contracting all the tensors that appear at larger length scales, which are not shown in this figure. And of course, you also collect some powers of the scaling dimension. So that's my two-point correlator as obtained from the boundary state. So now let me show you how to get this from the bulk. And let's look at the expectation value of a string operator in the bulk. So the string operator is composed of the two-side operators at the boundary and a string of these blue operators acting on the bulk sites that are located on the geodesic that connects these two operators. So this is a computation in the bulk now, so there are copy tensors everywhere. So what is this blue operator? It's simply a projector onto the plus state. So like I've showed you before, the action of this projecting a bulk site, so we are essentially projecting the bulk sites on the geodesic to the plus state, and the action of projecting a bulk site to the plus state is simply removing the copy tensor. So this contraction simplifies to this one, where you have copy tensors everywhere else except for on the geodesic. And now, once again, the tensors that are located in the shaded region, they again simplify because these are stochastic tensors now, and they simplify to this contraction on this side. But here you obtain a different environment tensor at the top, which is again once again obtained by contracting all the tensors at larger length scales, which also includes copy tensors this time. So it's a different environment tensor from the previous computation, but these tensors are once again the one-side scaling superoperator, and these operators simply propagate through. And so you get this expression. So this basically, once you get this expression, you can just essentially say that the boundary correlate two-point correlator can be obtained as an expectation value of the string operator times a factor, which is a complicated function of the Mera tensors. So that's one kind of simple way in which properties of these two states are related together. So just to summarize what I said schematically, so let's say this is a schematic depiction of the Mera and the lifted Mera.
This ratio is like very complicated. Do you gain anything?
Do you gain anything?
So I mean, like it's like as if like you divide by something and multiply by something, right?
Right. But this factor doesn't depend on the separation of the operators. Okay. It's just some function you compute once. It's a function of the Mera tensors. So if you're starting with the Mera, you give me the two tensors. I can tell you what this constant is, and that's fixed.
Do we have to use the geodesic, for example, or can you use other...
For this one, it is the geodesic. And this is just, so this kind of relation is just coming from the fact that the tensors are isometric, mm-hmm. and the way I'm constructing the bulk state. So I'm using properties of the copy tensor and the Mera tensors being isometric. So these are the two properties that play a role in getting this kind of relation. So yeah, just to then summarize what I said is that there's some sort of an identification between two-point operators in the boundary and a string operator in the bulk. Well, you can also do the same thing for three-point correlation functions, and you get an expectation value of a branched string operator, where again, once again, you're projecting all the bulk sites that lie on this red curve to the plus state. You can also kind of compute the Rainey entropy of the boundary site of a line segment in the boundary from the bulk. This is in two steps. First, you apply again a string operator on the geodesic between the endpoints of the boundary. This is the same string operator, so projecting all the sites that lie on this geodesic to the plus state. And in this projected bulk state, you can compute the Rainey entropy of all the bulk sites that lie in this region, so enclosed between the geodesic and the boundary. And these two Rainey entropies are the same up to an additive constant. All right, so.
I have one question. I'm too confused about it. So the fact that you consider a string operator is dictated by the structure of Mera, I mean, in that particular one, or it's your choice?
No, this is an exact expression. So this is what you get. So if you compute the expectation value of this.
If the string is not a geodesic, but it's some other.
Then you don't get the same value, no. So you need a geodesic. It is only a geodesic.
Okay.
That's the property of this construction. So all I'm saying is, look, I defined a bulk state, and this is how correlation functions can be computed in the bulk. That's all I'm saying, okay? And the thing which I want to highlight with this dictionary here is that it has the generic feature of this is this: the point-like operators on the boundary correspond to some string-like extended operators in the bulk, string or branch strings or higher order branch strings. This, I would like to know if this kind of somehow reminds of this prescription of computing boundary correlation functions from the bulk in ADA-CFT using these Witten diagrams, where you evaluate these different scattering processes. And these scattering processes are essentially described by an extended operator in the bulk, which is a composition of your bulk boundary and bulk propagators. So just making a simple analogy that, okay, so you get some sort of extended operator description in the bulk, even in this case. All right.
I mean, such sharp features in holography arise only over special operators.
Sorry.
I mean, such sharp features in the bulk in holography arise for very special.
You mean
operators.
The geodesic?
On the other hand, like if this, if what you call a geodesic is associated with the causal structure, say like the causal diamond in the visitor
right.
space.
Yes.
That it is a sharp feature in gravity. So like that sounds more likely. So instead of talking like Witten diagrams, like I would talk about causal relations in this.
But it is exactly the same geodesic. It is this causal diamond.
Yeah. But what I say is that this is sharp regardless of what operators it.
Oh, that's true. That's true. But we're here, so okay. But this is the operators. They have to be scaling operators of the conformal field theory. They have to propagate through this your scaling superoperator. Yeah. All right. So next, I want to just describe some entanglement and correlation features of the bulk state. So one general feature is that the bulk state has an area law entanglement, which is if I consider an arbitrary region of bulk sites and look at the entanglement entropy and see how it changes as I scale the region, you find that it scales as the size of the boundary rather than as the volume of the region. So, well, this is not, so you can prove this explicitly, but it's not very surprising because this is a tensor network representation from anybody state and somehow comes equipped with this area law entanglement. But I just wanted to just kind of mention this. So next, what we did is we looked at the entanglement. Oh, the area law?
Yeah.
Well, you can prove it explicitly and I can do it if you're interested later, but yeah, I wanted to, but this is a general feature of tensor network states anyway. So because this is a tensor network representation of a quantum many-body state, it kind of comes built in with this. Okay, so a relevant, okay, but I can show it explicitly. But maybe a relevant comment is that you can reorganize this tensor network to look like a hyperbolic BEPS, a projected entangled Bayes state, by contracting the copy tensor with the seismometry and so on. And then BEPS comes with an area law entanglement.
Just a quick question about that. By an area law entanglement, you mean the area provides an upper bound, right? Not
sure,
the
sure, expression. Sure, yeah. Okay, so next we look at the entanglement of bulk sites that lie on a geodesic between two points of the same scale. And we did this for different critical models, models for different central charges. So here I wanted to suss out if there's any dependence of the bulk entanglement on the boundary central charge. So remember in the dictionary, I mentioned that you can compute the Rényi entropy of the boundary from the bulk anyway. So okay, the central charge information seems to be there. But there we projected the bulk state using a string operator. So here I'm looking at the bare bulk state. And I'm just computing the entanglement entropy of the bulk sites on a geodesic by tracing out all these other sites. And this is what we find. So the entanglement entropy scales linearly with the size of the geodesic, which is not surprising because there's an area law entanglement. But the slope of the scaling increases somewhat monotonically with the central charge of the model. So in fact, for these different XXZ points, these different XXZ points correspond to different conformal field theories with the same central charge. So we find that the slope for these different points is approximately the same. So we're given these different Hamiltonians.
Yeah.
So we find the ground state as a mirror mm-hmm. for each one of these. And then each one of these ground state mirrors, I lift them to a bulk state. And in that bulk state, I'm looking at the entanglement entropy of the sites that lie on this geodesic.
So you optimize each tensor from there?
So I find the mirror representation of the ground state of each one of these mm-hmm. critical models. There are known algorithms that give me that,
mm-hmm.
like an energy minimization procedure by using it as a variational ansatz. Or... So I get the mirror, mm-hmm. and then I lift the mirror to each one of these ground states to a bulk state.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm looking at the entanglement of the geodesic sites in the bulk state and trying to see if there's any dependence of this entanglement on the boundary central charge, right?
So what's the role of this copying on this bulk lips here? Because what's the role of this bulk lips? Because I guess we can compute two-point correlators without any of these copying tricks, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was just showing you that there is some, but in holography, you can compute the boundary correlation function either from the boundary description or the bulk description.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That was just showing you that, look, here's a simple way how you can compute the boundary correlation function from the bulk state.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I was saying there.
Okay.
Yeah? Okay, so here, the slope of these lines, they increase somewhat monotonically with the central charge of the boundary. And there is the different slopes here, the XXZ points, which are conformal field theories, different conformal field theories with the same central charge, you find that the slopes are approximately the same. So this kind of suggests that the bulk state knows the central charge of the boundary. This is not a priori obvious because this lifting procedure could have washed out the critical information. And this somewhat kind of reminds of the Ryu-Takanagi formula because instead of looking at the length of the geodesic and seeing that it depends on the boundary central charge, we're looking at the entanglement entropy of the sites on a geodesic and find some sort of a dependence on the boundary central charge. Next, we look at the correlation lengths in the bulk by looking at the mutual information between two sites at the same scale and two sites across scales for these different critical models. and we find exponential decaying correlations in both directions for these critical models. And once again, the correlation length seems to decrease with increase in central charge, except for the Ising model, which doesn't quite fit in this pattern, but the others do. And once again, these different XXZ points, which have the same central charge, they appear to have similar comparable correlation lengths.
The correlation length does not depend on your MER algorithm?
The correlation length does not depend on the
MER
algorithm.
There is some prescription to point tensors, but
yeah.
Then there is no dependence?
I'm assuming I have an accurate approximation of these ground states as a MER. That's my starting point. But now I'm defining these bulk states from these MER representations. And now I'm looking at the correlations, the mutual information in the bulk. So these are bulk states. I'm looking at two bulk states and how the
So my question is this numerics, you fixed the MER algorithm on them?
Yeah, okay. The MER algorithm is fixed. And
I just don't understand, you fix the algorithm for different models and then compare and then why is does it?
So I have an algorithm that gives me the MER representation of the ground state of all these models.
And then is it, okay, so then.
I start with that, that's the starting point. I have that, I can compute, you can see that this is a good approximation of the ground states. We can compute all the conformal data of these critical models from this representation accurately. And then I lift these MER representations to bulk states, and now I'm studying the properties of the bulk states. And this is the correlation lens in the bulk. So I'm looking at these two sides.
My question is simple. If someone brings you another MER algorithm, which works as good as yours, and then it's all these results of the
same. Yeah, it should be, because as a representation of the ground state, it's reproducing, I'm reproducing all the conformal data of the ground state. The central charge, the scaling dimension, and so on. So that is my metric for saying that this is a good representation of the ground state to begin with. So if you give me a different algorithm, I would look at that. Is it giving me the right conformal data? And if it is, I would, the two states should be the same. But yeah, but I've used the energy minimization algorithm here for these results.
When you say distances between sites in the bulk, are you considering horizontal separation, vertical?
Both. So this is across scales, which means two sites at the same scale, and I separate them with longer distances.
So is there some direction that is light-like with zero distance?
No, I haven't looked at that. So.
So you're considering possible signatures.
These are just like yeah, that's right. These are the two space-like, the vertical and horizontal directions.
I'm not exactly sure what's being calculated, but is the fact that there's a boundary there in that picture?
It doesn't make
that's
sense.
Irrelevant.
That's irrelevant because when you compute the reduced state of these two sites in the bulk. Even if there were infinite layers, they all cancel out because they're stochastic tensors. So the reduced state of the bulk sites only depends on the tensors at higher length scales. They don't receive contributions from the lower ones. All right, okay. So then the last quantum information feature of this bulk state, this I found slightly curious, is the following, that let's look at this is the bulk state. Let's look at the geodesic between two points at the boundary. Now this is the boundary. Then this geodesic divides the bulk sites into three sets, interior, then the sites that lie on the geodesic, and all the remaining sites. What we find is that, now this is independent of the actual ground state, and in the boundary state. So this is just a structural feature of the bulk state constructed from the MER. What we find is that the reduced state of all the interior sites, this two-dimensional region, is related to the reduced density matrix of all the sites on a geodesic in a simple way, namely as a conjugation by an isometry. So this isometry is simply obtained by contracting all the interior tensors. And in particular, what that implies is that the spectrum of these two reduced states is the same, and therefore the entangled entropy is exactly the same. So the entangled entropy of all these sites in this two-dimensional region equals the entangled entropy of the sites on the geodesic. Not only that, If you were interested in computing the expectation value of an observable on these interior sites, you can always find an observable that acts only on the geodesic boundary, such that the expectation value of the two observables are the same. So from an interior observable, you can construct this observable which acts only on the geodesic sites, such that the expectation value of these are the same. So this is like saying that this geodesic behaves like some sort of a holographic screen, in the sense any expectation value in the interior, the two-dimensional interior, can be computed from the one-dimensional boundary. Now, this feature is not only exhibited by geodesics. A more general criteria is that you decorate the tensors with arrows, the indices with arrows. And then the criteria is any path such that the arrows are incoming into the interior exhibits this holographic screen property. So here's an example of a path that is not a geodesic, but behaves like a holographic screen. So this feature then, I mean, a natural question to ask is there an analog of this feature in the boundary description? What does it correspond to in the boundary description? Because that is the game we are playing. We are looking at some bulk features and then kind of asking, what does this correspond in the boundary and vice versa. And recently it was shown that if you were to draw this holographic screen in the mirror, not in the lifted mirror, and then the mirror, the original mirror tensor network, then the tensors lying inside and in the interior, they implement a local conformal transformation on the ground state. So this translating an observable in the bulk from the interior to the geodesic screen corresponds to applying a local conformal transformation on the corresponding ground state, on the boundary state. So just a summary of features related to holography so far, before I just start with my last section, is that the bulk state I've defined here is derived from an RG description of the ground state, which is the mirror representation. I've showed you how two-point boundary correlators correspond to the expectation value of an extended operator in the bulk. It's kind of similar to Witten diagrams and the ADA-CFT correspondence. I've also shown you that the bulk state can be described in terms of holographic screens just a second ago. And this feature kind of corresponds to the action of local conformal transformations on the ground state. And then I've shown some numerical results which kind of illustrate that the bulk entanglement may show some dependence on the boundary central charge. And this looks like some sort of an analog of the Ryu-Takayanagi formula. All right, so just my final section. This shouldn't take long. So far, I've kind of discussed the entanglement correlation properties of the bulk state. That's the quantum information features of the bulk state. Now I want to introduce some meaningful observables in the bulk. But with the formalism I have so far, I can't do this because I don't know what these bulk degrees of freedom are. In other words, I don't have well-defined quantum numbers in the bulk. So I'm going to now introduce some quantum numbers in the bulk. But in the process, I'm also going to establish some connection between the mirror and spin networks. So I'm going to consider a slightly different situation. I'm going to introduce the action of a global symmetry on the boundary now. So that's my boundary lattice again. And then I'm going to introduce the action of an on-site global symmetry. Here, VG is the unitary representation of the symmetry. And I'm going to demand that the Hamiltonian, the critical Hamiltonian, commutes with the symmetry, and that its ground state is also invariant under the action of the symmetry. And now, this is the starting point. So I have a ground state with a global symmetry, and I want to represent this with a mirror now. But I'm going to choose to represent it with a mirror that is made up of symmetric tensors, the tensors themselves commute with the symmetry. And to do that, I have to introduce the action of the symmetry on the tensors. And you do that once again by introducing arrows. And the symmetry acts according to the arrows. So an outgoing index the symmetry acts as the unitary representation, and on an incoming one as the adjoint. So once you define that action of the symmetry on the tensors, I'm going to demand that the tensors are invariant under this action. Why am I using symmetric tensors? There are two reasons. One is a mirror network made up of symmetric tensors automatically guarantees that the boundary state has a global symmetry, and it captures the symmetry exactly, even though it may be an approximation to the ground state. But the symmetry is captured exactly. So I want to capture the symmetry exactly in the ansatz. And second, it also captures the expected renormalization group flow of the ground state using symmetric tensors. So for instance, if the ground state belonged, consider a gapped ground state belonging to the Haldane phase, which is protected by some on-site symmetries. The large scale properties of this ground state depend on some entanglement, which is protected by the on-site symmetries. And if you don't use symmetric tensors, it is possible that in the renormalization group flow of this symmetric ground state, it may flow to a product state, and you may remove this protected entanglement. But using symmetric tensors is one way to ensure that that the ground state flows to the expected RG fixed points. that's just some sort of a motivation I'm kind of suggesting for using a symmetric, a mirror representation made of symmetric tensors. So now starting with this RG description of the ground state described by symmetric tensors, I'm going to build a bulk state. So we need a copy tensor. Now, a natural basis on the indices, since all the tensors are symmetric, a natural basis on all the indices of the tensor network are labeled by the irreps of the symmetry. So for the purpose of this talk, let's just imagine the symmetry is an on-site SU2 symmetry. So we have three quantum numbers. We have the total spin, spin projection, and each bond can also carry multiple copies of the same spin. So there's some degeneracy there, right? So we need to insert a copy tensor that copies these three degrees of freedom to an open index of the lifted mirror. That's, of course, natural. We want to demand a copy tensor that copies these three degrees of freedom correctly. But I'm also going to demand that it's symmetric. So what you can see is that there's no tensor with three indices that satisfies both these conditions. For instance, if your bond index carried a spin half representation, it could not copy the spin half representation to an open index and be symmetric at the same time, because there's no symmetric tensor that couples two spin halves to a total spin half. So the simplest choice is to use a four-index intertwiner. Basically, a four-index copy tensor that copies these bond indices to two open indices now. And it's defined like this, so it's decomposed into two parts. The right-hand side part copies the total spin and the spin projection to the open indices, and the left-hand side part copies the degeneracy indices to the open indices. And these are just the regular three-index copy tensors that we've been using. So that's going to be my copy tensor that I'm going to use to lift this ground state with a global symmetry. And from the way I've defined the symmetric tensor, you can quickly verify it has this nice symmetry property. If there's an action of a symmetry operator on an open index, translates to the bond index. So that's my lifted mirror now. So I've inserted this four-index copy tensor on all the bonds here. So now I'm going to introduce gauge transformations in the bulk in the following way. Elementary gauge transformations are introduced by acting with the symmetry operators on the bulk sides immediately surrounding a disentangler or an isometry. So consider the action of these two elementary gauge transformations on the bulk state. Using the symmetry properties of the copy tensor, what you find is that these symmetry operators, they slide through onto the bond indices and now act around the tensors, which are themselves symmetric, so they get consumed. And therefore, the bulk state is invariant under the action of local gauge transformations. So we still haven't addressed a goal of introducing meaningful bulk observables. The last step is I'm going to decompose these tensors which commute with the symmetry using the Wigner-Eckardt theorem, just angular momentum coupling theory. So any tensor that commutes with a symmetry decomposes in terms of the intertwiners of the group, these black tensors, and some tensors that act only in the degeneracy spaces of these four spins, A, B, C, D. These intertwiners are nothing but just a contraction of two Clebsch-Gordan coefficients that describe the coupling of the spins A, B, and C, D to an intermediate spin E. You can do a similar decomposition for the isometry. And now I'm going to take the lifted mirror, my bulk state, and replace each one of these tensors, decompose them like this. And as a result, what you find is that the entire lifted tensor network factorizes as a sum of tensor product of terms. So you obtain a tensor network made up of intertwiners of the group and a mirror-like tensor network, a lifted mirror-like tensor network made up of only degeneracy tensors. So the left part, so the right part here is a network, is a tensor network of intertwiners. It's nothing other than a spin network. And then the sum here is over all the spin labels that appear on all the bond indices, as well as all these internal labels which are associated with these rank four intertwiners. Now, not all possible values of these spins appear in this summation because the spin labels are constrained by the spin network term. So in other words, this spin network term here labels a basis on the gauge invariant support of the bulk state, just like in a lattice gauge theory. So in fact, using this decomposition, you can write down a parent Hamiltonian for the bulk state. which is invariant under gauge transformation. So you can write down a Hamiltonian, which is made up of some terms which involves spins around a vertex, and a term which involves a spins around a plicket. So that's some sort of a representative parent Hamiltonian. So finally, this decomposition actually now allows us to probe some meaningful observables in the bulk state. Namely, you can look at observables that are gauge invariant. So they act non-trivially in the spin network side and trivially on the degeneracy indices. And the reason we can do that is precisely because now we have well-defined quantum numbers in the bulk. So these open indices just carry total spin and spin projection labels. So for instance, we can look at the expectation value of a loop operator that's gauge invariant, for instance, like a gauge field holonomy. All right, from the point of view of holography, what a possible interpretation of this decomposition is that the spin network terms, they capture the bulk gauge fields that are dual to a boundary global symmetry, whereas all the remaining degrees of freedom are captured in this other side. So these remaining degrees of freedom could include gravitational degrees of freedom and also matter degrees of freedom. And the other thing which is revealed by this decomposition of the bulk state is that there's entanglement. Generally, there's entanglement between these bulk gauge fields that are dual to the boundary global symmetry and these remaining degrees of freedom because of sum over these tensor product basis states. All right, so just finishing up this list of features-related holography, I've shown that the boundary state has a global symmetry, then the corresponding bulk state has a gauge symmetry. So the symmetry gets gauged in the bulk. And also that generally the bulk state has an entanglement between these gauge degrees of freedom and the remaining bulk degrees of freedom. So that's pretty much it. So just some final remarks. So we've constructed a bulk boundary correspondence between quantum many-body states using the mirror. And I've shown how it could possibly be used as a toy model to explore some features of the holographic correspondence on a lattice. So this lifting procedure, which kind of takes a tensor network representation to a different quantum many-body state, is essentially treating the tensor network like a spin network. So a spin network is a tensor network where the indices also carry degrees of freedom, as spin networks are used in lattice gauge theories. Like I said in the introduction, this bulk boundary correspondence can also relate together states belonging to different quantum phases of matter. I didn't talk about that here, but it could have applications beyond holography as well. So it could be a more general correspondence. And it would also be interesting to see if lifting other tensor network representations has some interesting applications, like the MPS and PEPs. All right, thanks.
So, are there any questions?
Yeah. So I was wondering if you could comment. There was a point in the book in which you were speaking about this structure of the quantum information structure of the bulk state, in which you could represent operators acting on a certain, let's say, causal region on the geodesic.
Right.
How is that connected to so this feature of holography in which you represent bulk operators on the boundary? Is it kind of like the same kind of structure? Because it looks very much like an instance network. Now there's also holography in which you push operators that you are acting on bulk legs or boundary legs. Pretty much obviously the same procedure. But say that you're doing it on some other bulk.
Right, so you can, push boundary, you can locally, but that's exactly what I'm saying. So the feature this would correspond to in the boundary is the action of local conformal transformations, which essentially push boundary operators to operators on deformed sites. So a local conformal transformation on your original lattice deforms the lattice locally. Okay, so it takes you to a lattice where some of the sites are now coarse-grained sites. So your original observables map to some observables on this coarse-grained lattice. So that's the RG description, which is a local conformal transformation. So this feature seems to be related to that, but here I'm translating some operators in the bulk, which have no meaning from the point of view of the, so an operator here in the bulk would probably correspond to some sort of a non-local operator smeared out of the boundary, possibly. So I'm just talking about this. This is a property of the bulk state. So if I introduce any operators in the interior, they get translated to, you can translate them to this screen. And I'm just saying that this seems to be related, or it's the corresponding feature in the boundary description seems to be applying a local conformal transformation, which is, I think, what are you talking about? This it pushes operators from your original lattice to a locally deformed lattice in the RG sense.
Well, actually, speaking of the other direction, like operators in the bulk, there is something called the spin representation, for example, that are represented on the boundary. Yeah,
because
it's kind of
yeah, I haven't actually, right, I haven't thought about how operators in the bulk map to some operators on the boundary. I think it's some.
Yeah, maybe it was more looking maybe in the settings in which you're thinking of an actual mapping between the boundary and bulk.
Right, yeah, so here I don't have an explicit map. That is true, that's true, yeah.
All right, anyone else?
Yeah.
You said at some point that the Burke state would be from off the environment.
I did not. I was saying that
it should satisfy the constraints.
It should, as in that's what I wanted to suggest as a proposal, that's the sense in which I'm thinking of this as the holographic dual. If you're calling this a holographic dual, that's what you would like.
Okay.
You want to show it's a physical state of some quantum gravity theory, and it has some sort of a diffeomorphism or quantum version of a diffeomorphism invariance.
Yes,
but I haven't shown that.
Some kind of graph independence. Like, for instance, if you treat like a binary mirror instead of a binary mirror, did you try with another graph?
No, I've just tried with this. So yeah, I don't know how the how the quantum analog of the diffeomorphism.
But that would be like a graph independence, like the.
Okay.
Because you have your idea slice, you consider like a discrete idea slice, so it should be independent on the discreteness, on the triangulation that you choose, on discretization.
Right,
so at the level of the mirror, I guess there would be the independence. On the
sure, but on the other hand, you can think of a diffeomorphism as an active transformation, right, where you fix the graph and move around your points. So maybe you can define some sort of an active transformation on a fixed graph also and show some sort of invariance under that. I don't know. But I haven't thought about diffeomorphisms.
Yeah. No.
Patch.
So about this business of making local conformal transformations. So it seems like the reduced state of bulk on the geodesic, just only on the geodesic, should be the same state as the. Reduced state of the boundary after the local conformal transformation.
No, because you have these copy tensors sitting inside, right? Mm-hmm. So remember, so we were tracing out all these bulk degrees of freedom.
Yes.
So imagine the tensor input contraction for the reduced state of these sites, right?
Yeah.
You would take this mirror, this lifted mirror, sew it with the conjugate one, right? And you would connect together all these open indices.
Yes.
And now, right? Whereas if you look at, so.
I think you're taking the boundary states.
I understand.
And ascending it.
Right. So you're saying, let's consider this boundary state, where I've removed some of the tensors, and this applies a local conformal transformation, right? So you're saying this boundary state now, right?
Yes.
And now you're saying, let's look at the reduced state of these guys, right?
Yes.
So that would be, take this mirror, this deformed, locally deformed mirror, you sew it along the conjugate mirror, but you connect only these open indices, right? And now let's look at the tensor network contraction for the state which I'm talking about. There you take, okay, once again, you're just looking at, you can remove this part because this cancels out anyway, and now you're sewing it, you're sewing it not only like this, but you're also sewing it inside at all points in the bulk.
Yes.
So this tensor network contraction, you'll have stochastic tensors everywhere. Whereas here, so you can see these are different expressions. This is not equal to this.
Yeah. There's another way that I'm thinking about it, which makes me think that that maybe there is a connection, but I'm going to talk about that.
Okay. Yeah.
But regarding the stochastic tensors, I mean, is there anything that they imply about, say, the classicality of reduced states?
Well, you see, it's not all stochastic tensors.
Okay.
It's like, because you're left with some residual original tensors close to the, and if you consider larger regions, you'll have many more of these original tensors. It is something, I don't know. I don't know how to think about this, but that's an interesting point here.
Marcus?
You're talking about the string operator in bulk.
Huh?
So your string operator that corresponds to, for which the expectation value is the same for the boundary operator. The string operator is tensor product between what happens to the boundary, and then operators along the geodesic, right?
That's right.
And the operators along the geodesic don't depend on which operator you choose.
That's right.
Is there, I know very little about the continuum picture of ADCST, but is there something corresponding happening in the continuum where the stuff that is like in the bulk doesn't actually depend on the operator you're looking at in the bulk?
I don't know. That is my question exactly. I would like to know myself. I don't know. But all I was trying to compare here is that you get an extended operator in the bulk, and there's a, so the prescription to compute boundary correlation functions in ADS-CFT also involves extended operators. Yeah. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
All right. Then let's thank Suki again.